You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Travis Boston about associate compensation. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2025 by Care Credit. Dr. Travis Boston is an equine practitioner and practice owner in Pennsylvania at Willow Creek Equine Veterinary Services. After graduating from Virginia Maryland Regional College of Veterinary Medicine in 2004, he worked as an equine veterinarian in Colorado and Maryland before joining Willow Creek in 2007. His favorite professional interests include podiatry and equine dentistry, where he has extensive training in advanced dentistry. Dr. Boston has served on several committees for the AAEP, including co-chairing the AAE Commission for Equine Veterinary Sustainability's Subcommittee for Compensation. He currently co-hosts the AAEP Practice Life podcast with Drs. Jessica Dunbar and Mike Pownell. When he's not taking care of patients, Dr. Boston enjoys exercising his highly developed sense of humor, playing racquetball, and spending time with his wife and three children. Welcome, Dr. Boston.
Thank you. Appreciate the extensive introduction. I'll try to live up to it.
Okay. We served together on the AAEP Compensation Subcommittee, and you absorbed a lot of data about compensation. What are the most important developments and new ideas that you've seen coming forward in the last few years?
Well, probably easiest is we're paying people more. That was a big source of interest was, you know, are we really paying people as poorly as we think? And I think we did prove pretty conclusively that maybe the AVMA data that we were going on was not necessarily accurate, that there was not as big a gap between equine veterinary compensation and small animal compensation as we thought, but that didn't mean that there wasn't a gap. And so we're definitely, I think as an industry, you can look at the numbers. I think we're doing a lot better at paying people more. I think we're also trying to take a better look at how almost logistically we pay people and to put an emphasis on the certain parts of practice that are really high pain points, most especially emergency care, and direct more awareness that that part of practice deserves an additional compensation and deliver additional compensation.
That is so true, because emergencies, when you think about them, so many clients think that, you know, you're just on for that emergency shift. They don't think about the fact that you worked all day long and that you're going to work the following day all day long. So I agree wholeheartedly. And one of the things I was so pleased to see in the AVMA AAEP report that recently came out was that 63 or 64% of practices were paying 100% of emergency fees to people. And that was really good news. So lovely to see. What about benefits? Do you think that associates like understand the value of the benefits?
Absolutely not. This is something that I've said for a while. Well, our benefits packages are really analogous to small animal in many ways. Some of what you receive in compensation as an equine vet, you don't see. And I really think that when particularly a newer associate or a new graduate sees an offer come across from a practice, it's so important for the practice to lay it out for them, all the things that they're doing for them, all the monetary values that are attached there and to see the additional benefits they're getting. Now, that also goes back to compensation based on production and some of the disparity between the flat salary model that exists fairly universally in small animal to where in equine there seems to be more production bonuses. But as far as actual benefits, I don't think that there's a lot of understanding from the associates, and I don't always think that there's an effort made from the practice owners to bridge that gap and show them what additionally they're getting. I try that very hard, try to do that in our practice. But if there can be a theme, when you sent me all these questions, if there could be a theme to this podcast, it would be education and enlightenment on both sides of sort of where the other side is coming from, because it's not as much of an, well, maybe it's too much of an us and them relationship between the associate and the practice owner. And I don't think always either side understands the motivations or the finances behind what the other side is doing.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
So at your practice, how do you handle associate compensation? Do you pay a salary? Do you have a base in a production? How do you talk to people that are coming to work for you?
Well, I actually just had an interview yesterday with a absolutely amazing vet student. So if you're out there, you were great. And I sat you down at the end and talked through, and we did go through all the different benefits and all the monetary values that are attached to them. I also talked about how we put a significant emphasis on quality of life, and there needs to be some level of understanding that as your workload goes down, your compensation also decreases to some extent. But I feel, and maybe this is the era in which I was trained, that there needs to be some reference to your production reflected in your salary. And I know that this is a tough thing for newer graduates, particularly ones with big student loan debt that need money coming in that they depend on. But I will never write a contract for an associate that doesn't have some reference to production-based pay. Now, maybe they're getting, particularly they're a new grad or just new to our practice, they're getting a very high, hopefully, salary that is a regular, can be counted upon salary. And then on top of that, they can earn production. And I'll be very honest with them and say in the first year, they probably won't. And then on top of that is their emergency fees. As you said, you know, we give 100% of all of our emergency fees to the person seeing the emergency. We have a lot of different emergency fees for different situations, but 100% of them go to the person that has to inconvenience themselves to go see them. And that is a lot of money. For this young lady, I went through a history last year and I tried to look at what our doctors average, and it's about $1,000 a month additional to their salary or to their compensation-based pay that they're bringing home for their emergency work. Now, they're not necessarily getting paid per se when they're on call but not seeing emergencies, and $1,000 is not nearly enough money to make up for the pain of emergency coverage, but it's a lot better than I think a lot of practices are doing, and we're trying to make an effort. That's also money that I don't think all new associates see when you go through the process with them. I really try to emphasize you will get this. If you don't, there's some kind of major issue with our practice, because everybody should have some level of emergencies. And I don't know what most practice owners are finding, but I think over the last few years, people have become very willing to pay for promptness. You know, there's a lot of emergencies we see, maybe even during the workday or in that shoulder time shortly after work, where fortunately or unfortunately, people say, well, I think it's an emergency. I don't know if they really do or not, but they don't want to miss work the next day. And so we go then, and that's frustrating, but you earn more money for it and everybody's happy-ish.
Right, right. And the everybody being happy does matter, right?
Absolutely.
What do you think? What do you think is the most challenging thing about associate compensation?
I think it's the, like I was saying before, it's the disconnect of the associates understanding how related that their salary and their work product has to be. I think it's really important for business owners to educate their associates about the finances of the practice, but most especially the relationship between dollars that you bill out and dollars that you put in your pocket. Even if it's not a direct relationship and you don't get paid exclusively on production, you cannot have an associate that works half days, whether that's their choice or whether that's the practice putting someone in that position. If you work half days, you should be being paid half. If you're not, something has to change. Life is not great. You also can't have an associate that is out there feeling horrible about doing their job and trying to be a good person and discount stuff for every hard luck case they see and not understand that it's going to have an impact on their salary. And I think that in a vacuum, people sort of understand that, but I think the majority of the associates, it's a pretty big vacuum, and they just kind of assume that the practice is wealthy, money will keep coming in, those day-to-day decisions don't matter a whole lot. And so exercises like you have done with your Decade One groups with the 100 pennies are great. And then discussions, I usually, when I sort of, when we're about to turn someone loose, I'll usually sit down and say, okay, look, here's the deal. You have a salary of X amount of dollars. You're going to work X amount of days in the year to earn that. So we're going to divide that up. We're going to multiply by 4. And then that's the number you need to hit a day in order to justify your salary. You don't have to do it. I'm not going to come in and yell at you if one day you're under, but maybe if you're under, when that call comes in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you think, hey, I should really go on this. Or maybe if you're consistently high, you feel good about yourself and you say, I am killing it. And you don't keep killing it. And you can take a little bit of a breath and relax a little bit. I think that is a really good exercise. And I think people are scared of it because nobody wants to feel like a salesman. Nobody wants to feel like they have a number they have to hit every day or they're going to be a problem. But creating some level of awareness of that, I'll call it honestly a responsibility to the practice for what you need to produce in order to justify what you're making, I think is something that a lot of people don't have. And I'm not going to beat anyone over the head with it. I'm not going to use it as a stick, but I'm going to use it as a carrot and say, if
not
you get over this number, yeah, if you get over this number consistently, then you will make that bonus at the end of the year. If you don't, it's okay. That's all right. No one's going to hurt you, but you need to have an awareness that you're not measuring up. And when we go into your salary negotiation for the next year, something has to change. And maybe it's the associate doing something wrong. Maybe it's the practice not utilizing them enough, but something has to change for everyone.
And sometimes I'll find in certain practices that they just haven't kept up with their fees. And so an associate may be working a long day, seeing a number of horses, and just can't get over the threshold because the fees, you know, they just can't get the invoices where they need to be. And when you talk with associates about how they can maximize their earnings, that what you're teaching them is so incredibly important.
I think so. I mean, maximizing your earnings, you know, at a certain point, as you say, comes with fee increases and that kind of stuff. But there's other things you can do. There's other strategies you can utilize. You can learn a new skill. You know, we have one vet at our practice who can do a gastroscopy in about a quarter of the time that it takes me with all the skill and more. And she is killing it. And you can stack her up with, you know, four of them in 2 hours, and she can give the spiel and do the gastroscopy, and she's done and out the door, and she's sold a mountain of medication, and that's great. It doesn't have to be that. It could be dentistry. It could be something else. I think one of the trends I do see is people love sports medicine. That's great. You can love sports medicine all you want. That is a very lucrative part of practice. But if you love sports medicine, you go to a big sports medicine practice, maybe you should try to love something else too. You know, some other revenue source for you. Another thing is efficiency. All associates should have some ability to regulate their efficiency. Do you have a haul-in practice? Are you encouraging its use? Are you looking at your schedule for the next day and saying, holy crap, or the next week, holy crap, why are these things on my schedule for the same day? They're an hour and a half apart from each other, and I'm going to be there the next day. It shouldn't have to be your responsibility as an associate. It really shouldn't. I understand that. But, you know, when we're busy, the staff throws stuff on. They don't catch everything. Maybe you can oversee. Maybe you can be part of the movement, drive the bus a little, and make your own life a little easier with efficiency, but also make it a little more lucrative with the money you're producing.
Yeah, efficiency really, really helps, which is why companion animal practices that can sometimes see, you know, three or even possibly four animals an hour, because the animals come to them instead of we are going to the animals. I appreciate so much the whole scheduling thing. And if associates are willing to look ahead into their schedule and make suggestions ahead of time to say, hey, it would probably work better if we did blah, 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 Sally, would you be willing to make those calls and switch those around? You know, I agree wholeheartedly.
One of the other things that we've started doing at our practice this year, as we were short veterinarians, is we had extra staff and we had a truck, and, you know, recheck blood draw, booster vaccines, very simple things that frankly are not high dollar calls. We'll have one day a week where we have the techs in a truck, and we'll try very hard to steer people to that day. And say, we'll send two people. So you don't even need to be there if you don't want to. And right. You just have the horse in a stall. We'll drive a truck there with technicians. They'll do the, for want of a better word, little Mickey Mouse call. And then we'll bill it under the associate. The associate still has to interpret the blood work, but they're not even involved. They get a piece of paper in their bin and they spend 15 minutes on it instead of driving an hour each way, drawing the blood, having a 20-minute conversation with the owner that, frankly, usually involves a lot of questions you can't answer till the blood work comes back. And then, you know, hopefully that makes you a little bit of money, makes the business more efficient. Yeah, it's a cost. You're paying the techs, you're paying the gas, but it's probably not as big a cost and loss of revenue as having your doctor and a tech go do that call and take two or three hours out of their day for a very low margin visit.
Very, very true. And utilizing your technical staff to the highest way that you can really can make the whole practice more efficient. So I love that you're doing that. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners about compensation or anything else in the world?
I just like to reiterate what I said before. However you can educate yourself as a student, as a new graduate, whether there's a mentor, whether there's a Decade One group you can join, Starting Gate, whatever you want to do, you have a responsibility to understand how the business works. You don't want to be an owner. That's okay. That's all right. You don't ever need to be an owner, though that's a good way to maximize your compensation too. Good way to maximize your headaches as well. But if you want to be a good veterinarian rather than maybe just a good doctor, then you need to understand all the aspects of the practice, and you need to understand what goes into you're getting compensation or you're not. Maybe you're even making some choices that you don't understand you're making, and they're detracting from your monthly take home. We are not job people. We are not punching a clock. We are not getting an hourly wage. We are career people. And that means that you need to generate a certain amount of money to get a certain amount of money. You need to understand the process of how that works. You need to understand how you can do it better, not just for the practice, but for yourself, for the patients, for everybody, so that we all do well, stay in business. We can actually offer our clients, you know, reasonable value, and everybody does great. It's a responsibility of the owners to try to educate the newer people, but it's also a responsibility of the newer people to own that idea and to, you know, really, really try hard to figure out how everything works, how the watch ticks, and how the compensation, where it comes from.
I love that idea, you know, because understanding how a business works, understanding how many fixed expenses are present that have to be paid no matter what the cash flow is, you know, it just helps people to understand some of the responsibilities of practice ownership and why their business owners come to them and give them information about, you know, instead of just saying, oh, sure, we'll give you a big raise. You know, it has to come from somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want a big raise, you may deserve it, or you may not. But if you come to me and you say, hey, I want more money, I'll always say, okay, let's sit down and look at it. You know, where's this coming from? Do you feel undervalued? Well, we can figure that out. And sometimes, you know, they're truly being undervalued. Sometimes they're not and feel they are. Sometimes they just want to adjust logistically where different things come from. Do you feel like you're not making enough of pharmacy revenue? Here's why. Do you feel like you're not getting paid enough on emergency? Okay, can we adjust the compensation in a way where we lower your base salary, but we pay you a per diem to be on call? Will that make you feel better about, you know, being on call? Whatever fits you. There is no one-size-fits-all solution. And when we did the subcommittee stuff, I was amazed at the number of ways that people chose to have different solutions, and what fit one person didn't always fit another person, but they were all okay. However you are comfortable doing it, you should do it.
A lot of different perspectives, for sure. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Boston. And thank you all for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave. Embrace change.